Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hello and welcome to a Thursday Live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid and all across the Sports Grid network. That includes sportsgrid.com/watch, where you can find your favorite destination and consume everything all across the grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. We are together here for the next 3 hours up until 11 a.m. Eastern time. We're on this Thursday, the third to last week of the NFL regular season kicks off. Week number 16 gets underway tonight in Los Angeles, out inside SoFi Stadium between the Rams and the Saints. Two teams at 7-7, both in the NFC wild card race, emblematic of the jumbled playoff picture in the NFC. We'll look around a huge Wednesday night in college basketball, a Wednesday night slate around the association, and set the stage for this Thursday. DRS, 3 hours together up until 11 a.m. Eastern.
And you, my friend, would say the penultimate week in the NFL season is now upon us here as we charge forward. This game is actually going to be a tough one to break down. There are some spots here that I do like tonight, but also playoff implications all the way around. By the way, Ben, did you know, I believe only two games this weekend don't have any playoff implications. That means we're in for a big time ride.
Every game down the stretch of this NFL season is going to have significance. There are going to be implications for the playoff picture, either seeding or just postseason spots available. We'll look at everything entering these final 3 weeks. You better bet. Next week, by the way, I'm using penultimate as many times as I can here on the Early Line on Sports Grid. But a huge Wednesday night around college basketball. Four teams entered Wednesday night here in week number 7 of this men's college basketball season in D1. A perfect undefeated side. Only three teams exit. Oklahoma handed its first loss of the season. Before we detail how that occurred, we welcome in our Sports Grid radio audience here. The opening hour of three live on this Thursday on the Early Line. He is Donnie. I am Ben. You're listening on Sirius XM channel 159. All of our radio terrestrial affiliates now in the fold as well. In Charlotte, neutral site, kind of, North Carolina in a top 15 tilt against 7th-ranked Oklahoma hands OU its first loss of the year. The Sooners under Porter Moser now 10-1 as UNC wins by 12, 81-69. The Tar Heels covering as a 2.5-point favorite.
Yeah, big time win for the Tar Heels here. And one of the things that we brought up yesterday was these games were going to go over in the territory of teams that are used to being quote-unquote home games here still fared very well. There were some high totals and high over-unders, which they did stay under, but that's a really good win here for North Carolina. I actually thought Oklahoma would be the better side. Not the case here. First half got off to a 36-28 lead, held on in the second half. Nice win for the Tar Heels and the ACC.
RJ Davis, a big night for the Heels. He has a team-high 23 points. Elsewhere around the ACC, but not near Tobacco Road, near us in Midtown Manhattan, inside Madison Square Garden, Duke hands Baylor its second consecutive loss. The Blue Devils, a big victory over a power conference foe, winning by 8-78-70. The Dukies covering as a 2.5-point favorite inside the Mecca, the world's most famous arena.
Thought this game would stay under the total, and it did, but I also thought the Baylor Bears would win. And my comment yesterday was, if the Baylor Bears, one of the best three-point shooting teams in the nation, come anywhere close to their average of around 46 to 47% as a team, they should win. Yeah. They shot 44% from three, and they lost. That's another big-time win here for the ACC and Duke's de facto home away from home, Madison Square Garden.
Everybody for John Shire, starting five, scoring in double figures. Ray J. Dennis for Baylor does lead the way with 17 points. They shot 44% from three. Did the Crazy. Bears under Scott Drew, just 8 of 18. The volume not necessarily there for Baylor to pull off what would have been a slight upset. Baylor on neutral floors the last two games in Detroit against Michigan State on Saturday. The Spartans a big victory. Duke knocks off Baylor for a second consecutive game. The Bears entered Saturday a perfect 9-0. UConn in non-conference play, maybe the best team in college basketball. The Huskies in Big East action, not the same. Their Big East opener last night on the road in South Orange against Seton Hall, and Hall Ball pulls off the upset. And not just winning by a point at the buzzer or pulling away late, a dominant performance out of Shaheen Holloway's Pirates. They win by 15, 75-60.
UConn went down to the Rock and got beat there by 15 points. It was one of those scores that if you're following through all night, it's like, okay, UConn sooner or later is going to come back. Maybe they're going to come back. Oh, no, they're not going to come back. That was an awesome win for the Pirates. And keep in mind, as you said, that was the first game in the Big East season. 1-0 now for the Seton Hall Pirates. A massive win. You can put that down on the resume at the end of the year as one of those big-time quad one victories.
Kadari Richmond leading the way for the Pirates, 23 points, but maybe more importantly, 8 steals. Theft last night for Kadari Richmond and this Seton Hall team. They win outright as a 7.5-point, 8-point underdog, handing UConn a loss in its Big East opener. A big night last night in Phoenix as well. Arizona trying to bounce back from its opening loss of the year that happened on Saturday in Indy against Purdue, and Tommy Lloyd's Cats do just that, winning by 13 over Alabama, 87-74. A total that was in the mid-170s does stay under despite 161 combined points.
Yeah, it's crazy. One team at 87, one team was in the 70s, and you stay under the total in college basketball. Make it make sense. And also yesterday, said, boy, that number is high. No handicap needed. I just said neutral court technically on the floor. I'll lean towards that, but also been saying I wasn't going to watch that game one bit because when you have that type of tempo, you don't want to watch it here. Easily stays under the total, but also equally impressive, the Arizona Wildcats with that victory over Alabama.
From the college level now to the pros, a 51-point performance for Joel Embiid last night at home against the NBA's best team entering. That was the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Sixers win by 14, 127-113 in the reigning NBA MVP. Goes off for 51 points and 12 boards. JoJo now the MVP favorite once again.
And he probably should be at this point in the season. He's been absolutely unbelievable. That's a very good Timberwolves squad that we saw that line yesterday. 3, 3.5 feel like a strong one for the Sixers and took that. But I also said where I was right and wrong. I don't know if I want to take Joel Embiid last night with his points prop here, which is in the mid-30s because they're going up against an elite defensive center. Focus more on Maxey. Well, Maxey did hit his points prop, but Joel Embiid went over the 50-point mark again last night. He's been unbelievable. He's a better version of his MVP self last year. That's awesome.
Leads the NBA in points per game at 34.4. Up that now, though, after a 51-point performance last night. 40-plus in three straight for Joel Embiid. The Clippers, the hottest team in the NBA. They have won 9 consecutive games after last night's victory in Dallas, 120-111 over the Mavericks. The Clippers covering as a 2.5-point road favorite in Texas.
Yeah, but they scored 120 points. That includes an 18-point third quarter. So they were hitting that gas pedal first, second, and fourth quarter. The Clippers are rounding into form last night. The superstars are playing well. Could it be a big year for those Clips?
The Clippers have won 9 straight. They have covered in 7 of 9. Good news for the Seahawks. Maybe Drew Locke was pretty good the last 2 weeks, but down the home stretch in the final 3 weeks, Geno Smith is returning from the groin injury. He is set to start for Seattle this weekend. A look back on the night that was in college basketball. Next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
What a night it was around men's college basketball in the midweek slate here before Christmas break. We have some conference action and some marquee top 25 tilts between non-conference foes. Welcome back to a Thursday live right here on the early line on Sports Grid. We recap it all. Jumpman, 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 the Jumpman Invitational in Charlotte, North Carolina. Technically a neutral site game for UNC and Oklahoma, but you know there was a lot of Tar Heel blue in that arena last night in Charlotte, and UNC takes advantage, handing Oklahoma its first and only loss of this year. North Carolina winning by 12, 81-69, the Heels covering as a 2.5-point favorite.
Yeah, Oklahoma really very, very good inside of the paint, both defending and also on offense. Didn't turn out that way yesterday. Only shot 40% from the floor as a team, which included only 30% from three-point range, which the handicap yesterday is they don't have to rely on the three-point shot. They couldn't make one either. 66% from the free throw line. It seemed like a runaway here for the Tar Heels, but they're ultra-talented. It's not a huge upset, per se, to say, oh, number 7 got beat by number 11. It still was in North Carolina, so you had that technical home court advantage here for the Carolina Tar Heels, but it was a good night all the way throughout. And again, 40% from three-point range for the Tar Heels. That pretty much is the clincher. And as well, shooting close to 77% as a team from the free throw line. That was a nice night for the Tar Heels. Wire-to-wire victory over Oklahoma.
RJ Davis, 23 points to lead Hubert Davis's team last night. 150 combined points between the two schools, staying under a total at 155.5. UNC, 5 times this year now, booked as a single-digit favorite against Power Conference competition. They are 3-2, both straight up and against the spread. Last night against the Sooners, the only game of those 5 game sample sizes that has stayed under. Oklahoma entered a perfect 10-0 last night. The Sooners suffered their first loss of the year. Only their second game as a dog for OU, Donnie. They had beaten USC outright in their first and only game as an underdog prior to last night. Of course, not being able to cover a short 2.5-point spread in Charlotte. Again, that's a top 15 tilt. Number 11, North Carolina, and number 7, Oklahoma. The Sooners surpassing expectation early on this year in the second year of Porter Moser's tenure there in Norman. If you know the name Porter Moser, it's because he was the head coach for those Loyola Chicago teams with Sister Jean and that power that made the runs to the Final Four in deep in the NCAA tournament. So from Tobacco Road, or more so Charlotte, up to Madison Square Garden, another ACC foe against a Big 12 team. It was Duke and Baylor last night inside MSG, the world's most famous arena, a place Duke is very comfortable. 78-70, the win in favor of the Blue Devils, covering as a 2.5-point favorite inside Madison Square Garden. But a big victory, Donnie, for John Shire's crew, because entering last night, Duke was just 1-3 straight up against high major conference competition, with their only win against a Michigan State team that has struggled to start this year. Now, MSU did respond with a huge victory over Baylor on Saturday in Detroit, so that was an upper advantage for Duke last night. But to get a victory over a top 10 Baylor team on a neutral floor, a good promising start now for Duke as they are about to enter ACC play.
Yeah, big squad on Duke, and also using the paint to their advantage. They shot close to 50% as a team from the floor, which is massive. And also getting to the free throw line for 29 attempts, they made 83% of those attempts. That's how you win basketball games on neutral courts. You sort of control the three-point line. It is interesting because Baylor does have a very good three-point shooting team and shot close to 45% from the three-point line, but only shot 18 times from there. So the extra cleanup points were coming, by the way, the Duke Blue Devils. It was a great game to watch. Close game at the half, close game pretty much throughout the entire second half. That was an enjoyable game on a neutral court there, but that's a big win for the ACC and Duke. We'll see where the Baylor Bears go, as you said, 2 straight losses now on the season.
153.5 the total inside Madison Square Garden. That game stays under as well. Jared McCain, the freshman from Sacramento, a big night for Duke. 21 points to lead all scorers, but all five starters for John Shire's Blue Devils scoring in double digits. Christmas break on the horizon after some marquee matchups throughout this week. And then we're really in the thick of conference play until the month of March and things get a little bit mad in college basketball. Arizona had suffered its first loss of the year on Saturday. Neutral site, kind of, in Indianapolis against Purdue. The Boilers scored 92 points and handed the Cats their first loss of the year, 92-84. Arizona fell off from that number one spot in the AP poll, still number four and still one of the best few teams in the country. In Phoenix last night, the Cats hammer Alabama. Now, credit to Nate Oates' team. They have played a ridiculous non-conference schedule against the best of the best in college basketball, but Arizona does get a big victory last night to respond from that only loss of the year, 87-74. But we said it yesterday, Donnie, Arizona covering as a 7.5-point favorite in the Valley. You don't often see totals in the 160s. That's at the high end of the market in men's college basketball. You rarely ever see a total north of 170, 175 in a hook between Arizona and Alabama last night, despite 161 points, stays comfortably under.
Yeah, it does stay comfortably under. And you're right about that. Getting battle tested early. There are some moral victories, according to the, you know, committee that's going to put you into March Madness. Not very many teams played. We're going to have Purdue, Creighton, and Arizona, which technically at the time was 4-8-4 that you played. Now, you lost all three of those, but you are going to get credit for those losses. Now, hear me out on this. You just ran through that gauntlet for Alabama. If you're looking at the projected schedule, and yes, I know options are going to change and rankings are going to change. The only ranked team on their schedule currently right now that they're going to play is Tennessee. That game is actually going to be played on January the 20th. After that, Ben, they won't see another ranked team technically until February the 24th. So roughly once over the next two months, they're going to play a ranked opponent. Let's see if Alabama can rack up those victories in conference play and certainly over this holiday break.
Yeah, I think there are some good teams in the SEC like Texas A&M, like Auburn, maybe even if Missouri finds their footing under Dennis Gates, that throughout the rest of this college basketball season could find themselves inside the AP top 25. But a good point, and that's the beauty of college basketball. You hope to have a couple of those non-conference wins, marquees and quad one on the resume by the time you get to Selection Sunday. But those losses are not bad losses. They are not going to necessarily hurt you in comparison to another team's resume. But Alabama against power conference competition, just 1-5 straight up. Their only victory against an Oregon team that is struggling right now. Arizona, by the way, as a started out winning their first eight games of the year, like we mentioned, their first loss on Saturday against Purdue. They covered in all eight of those games, seven times a favorite. Arizona now 4-1 straight up against power conference foes. Conference action last night. Big East opener for both Connecticut and Seton Hall at the Ruck, the Prudential Center in Newark. Seton Hall pulls off an upset. UConn against non-conference foes, as good as you will find. In the Big East, it's not necessarily as easy. The Pirates win by 15 outright as a 7.5-point home underdog.
Yeah, one of those stunners. Take a look at college basketball the day before. I was like, man, what's up with this? Citadel winning by 20 points against Notre Dame on Notre Dame's home court. Well, obviously, this didn't have that much of an impact because Seton Hall is a much better squad than the Citadel is. But certainly beating a team of UConn's ilk by that many points, that sends a signal. And also, maybe a little bit more of a wake-up call for UConn in that, you know, non-conference schedule handling their business. You got to remember, the teams that know you best and know you, the, you know, that are going to play you the closest are going to be in your own conference in the Big East here. So 0-1 UConn starts that Big East schedule. That's a massive win for the Seton Hall Pirates.
We've seen some home upsets so far, like Providence on the opening night knocking off the defending champs in Marquette. Creighton was hoping to do the same in Omaha last night. Villanova happy to be in the Big East and out of the Big Five. The Cats come back from down 10 at the break to force overtime. Eric Dixon scores 32 points for Kyle Neptune as Villanova wins 68-66 outright as an 8.5-point underdog in OT in its Big East opener against the Creighton Blue Jays. Nothing's going to be easy in the Big East this season. Around the NBA, we go up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Around the association we go, live on this Thursday morning on the early line on Sports Grid. Looking back on a Wednesday night slate in the NBA. I am Ben Stevens. He is Donnie Wrightside, and Joel Embiid is the reigning MVP in the association for a reason. And now he's the front runner to make it two in a row in 2023-24. After a 51-point performance at home inside the City of Brotherly Love last night against the Minnesota Timberwolves. 51 points for JoJo, and the Sixers win by 14 over Minnesota, covering easily as a 3.5-point home favorite. The final last night in Philly, Donnie, 127-113.
The one thing the Sixers do really well, and you know, this can come from Ben when you're in third, fourth, and fifth grade, like learn to shoot your free throws correctly because it's going to mean something. Once you get to high school, it's like if anybody can make, you know, 50% of their free throws, they're a king because barely anybody can. The Philadelphia 76ers have absolutely cornered the market on getting to the free throw line and absolutely parlaying that. They shot 90% as a team yesterday, 29 of 32. Anytime you can do that, and also with your center, Joel Embiid, going 17 of 8. I mean, it wasn't too long ago that, and I know Shaq is like the anomaly out there, just can't shoot free throws. But usually the big man, the reason why you foul him religiously under the rim is because you know he's going to shoot 50 or 60%. Joel Embiid shooting like 90, over 90 plus percent from the free throw line every single night is absolutely incredible and tax on points. Yeah. He went 17 of 25 from the floor, didn't make a three-point shot, but made 17 free throws in that 51-point outburst last night. The Sixers were incredible along with Tyrese Maxey. This is one of those teams, the Minnesota Timberwolves, who I think are one of the better teams out west. And the Sixers got down early. I think it was like an 8-0 lead here early on by the Timberwolves. It was all the Sixers the rest of the way. That is a huge win for the Sixers, fresh off a victory, or fresh off a loss to the Chicago Bulls that should have been a victory here. That's a nice bounce back for the Sixers, now 19-8 on the season.
Philadelphia has been great this year, like Donnie just mentioned, 11 games above 500, but also great covering numbers, 16-5. 16-5 against the spread as the favored side this year. And Minnesota had three players score 20-plus in their starting lineup. JD McDaniels, Karl-Anthony Towns had a double-double, 23 points and at least 10 boards. And then Anthony Edwards, 27 points last night as well. And Philly still won by 14. Yes, Joel Embiid scored 51 and had 12 boards as well. Tyrese Maxey poured in 35. If you're a Philadelphia 76ers fan or backer, and you see JoJo and Maxey combined for 84 points, you're not losing that basketball game. There's no chance you are losing that basketball game in the 76ers cover as a 3.5-point home favorite. Now let's talk about Embiid. He is the MVP frontrunner on this Thursday morning, flipping from where it was just 24 hours ago. Joel Embiid passed Nikola Jokic, plus 175 for Embiid, 3-1 for the Joker. Can he, Donnie, in your estimation, Joel Embiid, that is, win a second consecutive NBA MVP?
I mean, if you're going to play like this, this is the easiest time to answer this question. Absolutely. Like right now, he's far and away to me the best player in the NBA. And by the way, he is a big man. He is a big man scoring this many points in the NBA when they're supposed to be fossils now. But his game is so amazing where he can go inside and outside and is such a mismatch. And also, he's the James Harden of centers. Remember James Harden with Houston? Every time he went to the rim, got a foul call. Joel Embiid is genius at doing that, which means fouling your guys out. Now, also, you know what else is helping Embiid and the Philadelphia 76ers? Look at that game last night. 51 points out of Joel Embiid. They win by 14 points. He's only a plus four. Tyrese Maxey last night, 35 points. He was a plus one. The James Harden trade goes down. You get some bench pieces back, and you improved your bench in the offseason without those trades. The Patrick Beverleys of the world you're signing, the Kelly Oubres. It's amazing that you can do that win going away, and your superstars don't have to be plus 20 for you to win these games where every time they go to the bench, Ben, you're losing those points to the opposing team. This is a pretty good deep Sixers team. We'll see if they can add on to the trade deadline, but everything we've seen so far, the joke was, hey, man, the Sixers are putting away the Wizards on a night-to-night basis, you know, Charlotte on the night-to-night basis. No, this is a good team. They hammered last night at home at the Wells Fargo Center.
Embiid plus 175, Nikola Jokic 3-1, a fall off to Luka Doncic at plus 600. If it is between those two guys at the top, that would be four consecutive years. Either Jokic or Embiid has won the NBA MVP. As we go around the association, shorthanded last night, the Boston Celtics. The Celtics entered 20-6. Minnesota entered Wednesday evening 20-5. The T-Wolves lose in Philly. The Celtics were an underdog for the first time this year. Second leg of a Northern California back-to-back. No Jason Tatum. No problem. The Celtics went outright as a dog, as a 3.5-point underdog in Sacramento, and they win big. A 25-point margin, 144-119. Four guys in the starting lineup for Joe Mazzulla score at least 20 points. Both Derek White, both Jaylen Brown score 28 points apiece. Derek White, yet again, Donnie, six made threes last night. Peyton Pritchard answered with six threes off the bench as the Celtics win outright in their first game as a dog this year by 25 points on the road.
I love the ride, guys, with the hot hand here. But on a back-to-back time, I was like, we got a nice one out of Derek White last night. Don't go back to the well here, as you're right. He knocked down another six triples, which included a night for the Boston Celtics where they knocked down 22 triples, which was good for 52% shooting. That's on the road. Yeah. That's on a back-to-back. And that's without your best basketball player. That's impressive. Now, the night before, you saw Porzingis sit out. Porzingis played in this game, 7-11 from the field, including 3-4 from the three-point line, 24 points and a plus 22. I love the Kings yesterday. They got hammered by the Celtics, man. Back-to-backs, you can win on them sometimes, and the Celtics did that last night in a big way.
Donnie, I said to myself as we were breaking down that game, if Boston had enough offensively, would have loved the over of 236.5. The Kings have now gone over in 9 of their last 12 games, but I didn't think Boston was going to have enough with their legs on a second leg of a Northern California back-to-back. Boy, was I wrong. 144 scored by the Seas. Again, five guys scoring at least 20 points, including Peyton Pritchard off the bench. The Celtics, as an underdog for their first time of the year, went outright as a 3.5-point dog. 21-6 now the mark for the Celtics. That's the best in the NBA. And last year, Donnie, even including the postseason, Boston was only booked as an underdog 10 total times all of 2022-23. They were 9-1 against the number, 6 outright victories. This year, 1-0 against the number, 1 outright victory. If you see Boston again as an underdog, the last 2 years would tell you back the Celtics on that number. But the hottest team in the NBA, that's the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clips make it 9 wins in a row last night on the road in Dallas, covering as a 2.5-point favorite, winning 120-111. And they have covered, Donnie, in 7 of these 9 consecutive wins, including 5 in a row with a big victory last night against the Mavs.
How about this? They score 120 points. That's a big road victory. No Paul George in the lineup, and they only went 8 men deep. But take a look at this. If you're going to go 8 deep, which means 3 bench players, Ben, look at those 3 bench players. Tice, 11 points. Westbrook, 10 points. Powell, 21 points. That's how you get down with a bench and using it to your advantage here. Look, James Harden had a monster night previously. Only had 17 last night. But Kawhi Leonard, showing that superstar talent on a night-to-night basis now. Let's just make sure he's healthy for the playoff run. This is the Clippers team we expected. And also, hey, shout out to the Phoenix Suns here. Look, you can win big games without all three of your superstars in the lineup and do it against quality opponents. How about that novel concept? Big win by the Clips.
Luka Doncic was one rebound shy of another triple-double. He finishes with 28 points, 10 dimes, 9 boards. It snapped an 11-game streak for Luka, where he had scored at least 30 points. His points prop last night, 35.5. Did have some help off the bench. Tim Hardaway Jr. scoring 21 points. But the Mavs as an underdog now, just 2-7 against the spread, not covering by an average margin of more than 5 points per game. Again, like the Celtics as a dog, you back Boston. When you see Dallas getting points in a game, maybe you fade that and look at the other side. And again, the Clippers now, 9 straight victories, covering in 7 of those 9, the last 5 in a row as well. A Sunshine State showdown yesterday in Orlando between the Magic and the Heat, where Orlando entered as a 5-point home favorite against Miami, and the Heat went outright as an underdog. A big victory last night against the Magic, 115-106. Orlando entered last night one of the best teams covering as a favorite this year, Donnie, 8-1 against the number, both 8-1 straight up and against the number. Now make that 8-2, both straight up and ATS, as the Heat went outright as a 5-point road dog by 9 points.
Yeah, no real handicap for me last night. Just saw that strong line and pointed towards the Orlando Magic in this, and it turns out Jimmy Butler did not play in that basketball game. But when Paolo Banchero has been so good over the past couple weeks, scores 10 points in that game. He did chip in with 8 assists and 8 rebounds, but that's not good enough. He usually needs to be around that 20 to 25-point number. That's a nice win for the Heat, and that's Heat culture right there. 115-106, one of the lower scoring games of the night there.
Tyler Hero, 28 points. Bam Adebayo, 18 points. The leading scorer for Orlando was Cole Anthony. He pitched in 20 points off the bench. 219 and a half. We've seen 250s. We've seen 230s. We saw 175 in a hook in a college basketball game last night. 219 and a half was that total. It just creeps over despite being one of the more low scoring games in the NBA. Miami 6-6 against the spread as an underdog this year. 4 of those 6 covers, an outright victory. And Paolo Banchero, the reigning NBA rookie of the year, had been great in December for Orlando, but it shows why they lost at home by 9, only 10 points, when he's been averaging better than 24 points per game here in the month of December. All right, when we come back on the other side of the break, it is time to get you set for week number 16. Starting tonight inside SoFi Stadium out in downtown Los Angeles, the Rams and the Saints. We'll look at the spread and what it means for the NFC playoff picture next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Thursday night football kicks off week number 16 tonight in Los Angeles between the Rams and the Saints. We welcome you back to the early line on this Thursday as we set the stage for the third to last week of this NFL regular season. Week 16, 17, 18. That's it before we get to the playoffs around the NFL. And speaking of the postseason, this game to me really represents where we stand entering the final 3 weeks of this regular season. Two teams facing off in a conference tilt, both at 7-7. So this game has playoff ramifications for both the Rams and the Saints. Two teams in the wild card race as of this moment in the NFC. The Saints also have a chance of winning the NFC South, 7-7 alongside the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who have the same record. Both of these teams, Donnie, two of the five in the conference as a whole with a 7-7 record entering week number 16.
Yeah, this is going to be a big tilt tonight. And also, it's who really needs the game more than the others. And you say, well, Don, that doesn't make sense. They're both 7-7. Ben and I have talked about this ad nauseum. The final two games here for the New Orleans Saints are the big games they need to worry about. Now, granted, if they go on the road and win against the Rams tonight, is that a big win? Absolutely. It gives them a leg up in the NFC South. But the same thing for the Rams here. The Rams don't have any aspirations to win the NFC West. That's already done deal. That's the San Francisco 49ers. So what they're looking for is to pick up a couple wins and hang around in that wild card process. The Saints hope it doesn't come down to the wild card process, because their best chance to get into the postseason, of course, is going to be to win the NFC South, and that could start tonight. Right. However, I don't know if the matchup is right for the Saints tonight. Now, there's a couple moving parts we're going to talk about, like Chris Olave going to be playing this week, where he didn't play last week. The week before that, he was under flu-like conditions. But it is an ankle injury. There are some things I think the Rams can do to the Saints that I think might be too much. So before we get started, I'm pointing in direction today of the Los Angeles Rams to pick up this game. And it's not to say they need the game more. I just think they're the better team. They're at home. And I think this game means a lot here in the NFC standings for the wild card position. Because again, this could be a tie-breaking game, Ben. If the NFC South goes to another team, this is going to give the Rams a leg up against the Saints. Huge.
We will look at what this means for the Saints in the divisional battle in the NFC South, the playoff picture in the NFC at the end of this segment. But as we focus on this game breakdown, I'll be honest, Donnie, I was surprised to see this line at 4.5 in favor of LA. LA has won 4 of their last 5 games. The Saints have won 2 straight, but as Donnie has alluded to throughout this week live right here on the early line, you have to take that with a grain of salt, knocking off the Panthers and then the New York Giants, both at home and in those spots now on the road. But the Saints have only been an underdog twice this year. This will be game number 3. They won outright as a slight road underdog way back about 2 months ago in New England against the Patriots. They would not be an underdog against the Pats if that game were to be replayed on this day. And then a few weeks ago at home against the Detroit Lions, they got hammered early on, 21-0, 8 minutes into the game. Did make it competitive, but did not cover as a 4.5-point home underdog, losing by 5. Now, the Rams have been great when favored this year, 6-1 straight up, 5-2 against the spread. They have covered in their last 3 games as a favorite. But again, the line seemed a little bit hefty. I expected this to be right around a field goal, 2.5, 3, 3.5 in favor of LA. I was surprised to see it higher than that at this moment at 4.5.
And it is. It's a decent number here, right? And you're getting a lot of that off the Rams playing really good football as of late. Because why? Matthew Stafford's healthy. Puka Nacua is healthy. Cooper Kupp is healthy. And Kyron Williams came back a blazing fire. I believe the last 4 games been 3 times over 100 yards rushing. That's like dating back to the late 80s, early 90s when teams were committed to the ground game. Everything seems to be clicking on that Rams offense. But here's the questions that we're coming up with tonight on the New Orleans Saints. Which one of these teams is going to step up? Let's just go with a 4-game snapshot. You played a game against Atlanta and you lost, but your offense, this is what we're going to focus on. 148 yards on the ground, 296 in the air. That should be good enough to win a football game, let alone only score 15 points in that game. That's ridiculous. You played Detroit, and as you said, you got down early in that game, but you still ran for over 100 yards on that game, 113 yards on the ground, and 249 in the air. But the last 2 games against Carolina and New York, you really didn't need that offense, but their offense was invisible. 97 yards on the ground, 110 in the air, followed up by 87 yards on the ground and 209 in the air. Now, also, they had very good defensive efforts in those past 2 games. Here's the problem I worry about with the Saints tonight. Forget about Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua and Matthew Stafford. It's Kyron Williams. Before that game against the Giants, where they gave up 60 yards on the ground, 3.8 yards per carry, look at the last 4 games. 204, 142, 228, and 125. They got a speedball coming at them tonight in Kyron Williams. Yeah. That's where this game is going to be won or lost. And quite frankly, I trust the Rams running game more than I do the Saints ground. Stopping attack on defense in this game. That's where I sit.
46.5 is the number tonight from that total perspective. Last 2 primetime games of week number 15 stayed well under. Sunday night in Jacksonville, Monday night out in Seattle. But the Saturday night cap of the triple header, week number 15, well over between the Lions and the Broncos. Thursday night football, of course, when the Raiders scored 63 points against the Chargers, that game went well over as well. But New Orleans is built defensively, under in 10 of their 14 games this year. The Rams have been over in 3 of their last 4. Only last week against the Commanders, total at 48.5, game finishes with 48 total points, just stayed under. I think you could correlate that total which side is better on the spread this evening. If the Saints can muck it up and it stays under 46.5, benefits New Orleans to keep that number in scoring at a premium. If the Rams are going to look great as the favored side once again, I think we see some offense, and I think New Orleans would then have to keep pace, pushing us to an over.
Yes. And again, we're not have to worry. There's 2 dome teams playing in a dome. It's the perfect scenario. It's where they're used to playing, and we're not going to worry about any weather conditions. Also, look down the line for the New Orleans Saints, opening up the practice windows on Marshawn Lattimore, by far their best cornerback, who's been out for weeks here, and Michael Thomas as well. So we're looking on the horizon as the Saints are getting healthier. And also keep in mind, over the past couple weeks, Ben, what have we seen out of New Orleans? Derek Carr has been concussed and injured. Chris Olave entered into the Carolina game under the flu, wasn't sure if he's going to play, then hurt his ankle and missed last week's game. game. He's back and active tonight. Rashid Shaheed, that wide receiver that gives you that extra deep ball here, he's been down and missed a few games and has been banged up and injured. So you're getting some of these players coming back healthy at the right time, which should help that offense. But I still think we're probably a week away where New Orleans, and I hate to say this because every game means so much. The Saints are not going into a Thursday night football game here, Bengal. Like, you know what? It's not going to be the worst thing if we just don't get injured and lose this game. Absolutely not. Kitchen table game. You have to win this year. I just don't think they're going to be able to line up and beat the Rams tonight. But the future still can hold some pretty good things over the final 2 weeks when they get healthy and get back to the division and pick up some dubs.
Yeah, certainly so. I think the NFC South divisional race is going to be decided the next 2 weekends. New Orleans in Tampa, week 17. New Orleans at home against the Atlanta Falcons. The Buccaneers a 1.5-point home favorite at this moment against the Jacksonville Jaguars at home on Sunday. A lot will be determined in that game, in the outcome, and what the pregame number looks like on if Trevor Lawrence gets out of concussion protocol and suits up to start in that game for the Jags. Let's talk quarterbacks here, because what we will see tonight is a slight rarity at this stage of the 2023 NFL season. Two guys that started the year starting tonight. Derek Carr for New Orleans, Matthew Stafford on the other side. And as the Rams have picked it up, they've won 4 of their last 5 games, so has Matthew Stafford. He has thrown for at least 258 yards in the last 3 games, well over that prop of 242.5 tonight. Derek Carr hasn't had to do much in the last 2 wins for New Orleans, but was really efficient last week against the New York Giants. 23 of 28, 218 yards, had 3 touchdown tosses, nearly as many touchdowns as incompletions last week against the G-men. And the Saints defensively, in terms of the secondary, Donnie, have only allowed 1 quarterback to go over that prop you see tonight of 242.5 in their last 7 games.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting here because, again, I think that ground game is the way you attack that New Orleans Saints team. And also, take a look at Matthew Stafford, though. You're right. We're getting back to those MVP-type performances here that we used to see with the Detroit Lions, where you leaned on Matthew Stafford and he delivered. In those 4 games, passer ratings, Ben, 121, 110, 103, and 118. Touchdown passes where you know you like to get down and have some fun, maybe an over 1.5 touchdown pass. He's done that 4 straight games. 4-3-3-2 here. So he's lining it up and certainly on fire. This team, again, healthy at the right time, coming in, playing good football. Yeah. That's where I'm going to lean it here. But you're right. Also, another Swiss Army knife, Taysom Hill. He's been banged up the past 3 to 4 weeks, finally coming back last week. So everything is there for the Saints in the future. We'll see if they can put it together tonight. And also, let's not forget, it's a Thursday night game. It's extremely hard on a short week here to fly from New Orleans out to Los Angeles and play this game against a very good and red-hot Rams team. So, again, I'm leaning towards the Rams in this one. I think they're going to be able to pick up the victory.
The Rams offense is what makes them go. Kyren Williams has been a key component of that the last month and a half. 4 of the last 5 games, he has had at least 114 yards on the ground. And in the 1 game that he went under his total tonight of 89.5 for Thursday night football, it was a couple of weeks ago, he had 88 yards still on the ground. Kyren Williams has been a spark for this LA offense. They will rely on him tonight, Donnie. It's been your main focus from that key matchup perspective. If the Rams have success on the ground getting after that New Orleans defense, it could be big things for LA in covering that 4.5-point spread.
Absolutely. I mean, again, look, 4 out of the last 5 games, 158, 143. Oh, by the way, his bad game was 21 carries for 88 yards and a touchdown there. After that, 114 and 152 against Washington. And also, as I pointed out multiple times, the way you attack that New Orleans defense is on the ground game. Everybody's probably going to be pointing towards Kyren Williams tonight, right? And the fact of the matter is, I don't know if I want to take a guy 88 yards, 90 yards to get it here, maybe alt it to 100. Well, quite frankly, he's also getting fed the last 3 games, 21 carries, 25 carries, 27 carries. Now, hear me out on this, Ben. As I already brought up, it's hard to play football on Thursdays in the NFL. We just said this. 21, 25, and 27 just last Sunday. Does that mean we're going to run him 25-plus times again 3 to 4 days later? That's always an interesting option to look at because Sunday to Sunday, we're not worried about that. Sunday to Thursday, maybe a little bit more banged up after getting so many touches. And also keep in mind, had 7 targets last week in the passing game and 5 catches.
Yeah.
So we had over 30 touches on Sunday. How many touches are you going to give him knowing you're going to need him healthy down the stretch and into the playoffs if you make it?
been targeted at least four times through the air in their last four games. You'll see a minus 210 price on Kyren Williams to find the end zone. I think we have a Kyren Williams graphic. I'm not entirely sure. Minus 210 is that number to hit pay dirt for Williams tonight. He has scored in four of the last five games, including two receiving touchdowns against the Arizona Cardinals a couple of weeks ago. And again, that NFC playoff picture entering tonight, 7-7 LA, 7-7 New Orleans, two of five 7-7 teams around the NFC. The price for LA to make the postseason in minus money. Not quite the case for the Saints, but it also will come down to the Saints winning the NFC South. And as we have both shared, Donnie, it's more important for New Orleans the final 2 weeks. Not that they're going to lose this football game or think, it really is decided in week 17 and 18. But even if they lose tonight in LA, the Saints still have a great opportunity down the final 2 weeks of the season against divisional opponents.
Absolutely. And that's Tampa Bay, and that is the Falcons tonight. And also back to Kyren Williams here. It's not December 26th, Ben, where you get all those discounted prices at the department store. You're paying top dollar for Kyren Williams before Christmas tonight. Yes, you will be. And probably he's still going to cash anyway.
LA right now minus 132 to see the NFC playoffs. New Orleans slightly in plus money, plus 104. More news on the early line up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Conference realignment will be a story entering 2024 as we end out 2023, the calendar year, and our opening hour live on this Thursday on the early line on Sports Grid. We talk a little conference realignment. It's myself, Ben Stevens, and Donnie Wrightside, the Pac-2, the forgotten sons of the Conference of Champions, Oregon State and Washington State, with everybody else either joining the ACC, the Big Ten, or the Big 12 in 2024. There has been some conversation about the Beavs and the Cougs and what they are going to do in terms of football. A scheduling alliance announced just a few weeks ago with the Mountain West Conference. But what about the other sports? Yesterday, breaking news in college sports, Matt Norlander of CBS Sports saying Oregon State and Washington State have reached a preliminary agreement with not the Mountain West Conference for their other sports, but with the West Coast Conference, the WCC. Donnie, what was your reaction?
My reaction is it's a harsh reality here in the sports world where you take a look at Oregon State and Washington State and realize as a brand, nobody wants you. Nobody thinks you hold any weight here and left you behind, and nobody's making phone calls to say, hey, let's bring this back into the equation. You're talking about two teams that were in the Pac-12, one of the premier conferences in America. Everybody leaves and you're left standing there. You should have the facilities to be Division I and major Division I, and you're not going to get that here. So here's my solution for them, Ben. Call up Amazon, say you got stadiums, you got buildings, make them warehouses here. Turn that into a profit machine because you ain't going anywhere near major Division I college football or basketball ever again. It's a tough reality, but make the best of it here. Make some money with that.
I mean, that was one of the most ludicrous things that you have ever said, and talking college football with you has made my blood boil, my cholesterol.
The market talks. Just, nobody wants them. The WCC.
Listen, money is the driving force behind everything. I mean, money is the driving force.
Get a New Jersey Athletic Conference. We'll take you. Rowan, Keene, Montclair State, William Patterson. They'll give you a run for the money, by the way.
Cut Mike. Oregon State and Washington State, you are proud fan bases. You're making the best of a tough situation. And you will see your money because the Mountain West will still drive that for college football. Just a readjustment. Hour two starts in less than a minute.